Today's episode deals with mature themes. Listener discretion is advised. You good?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm all jazzed up because I just went running in the 101 degree heat.
Well, why'd you do that?
I did it because I haven't worked out in a while, and I'm a crazy person.
Yeah, neither have I, which is why I almost died doing that 5K, which was pathetic.
Mom and I did ours at the beach yesterday, and I was really proud of us. Not yesterday. Saturday. So go us.
Yay!
I feel like my AC is really loud, so I apologize. Oh, my fan's on. Hang on, let me. Why don't you introduce the podcast while I go turn off my fan?
While Caroline gets herself situated, what this is, it's Hereditary. I'm Haley, and...
this is Caroline. She's the one who apparently swears a lot whenever she's very nervous. See episode 5.
Yeah. Well, between that and I think just having your brother around just kind of puts you into that mindset. I don't know. Something about Blake's presence brings it out in you, I guess.
Are you saying Blake brings out the worst in me?
Probably.
Oh, Blake. Ugh. Well, we had fun with him last week, and I hope everyone enjoys it. Came out today, so it would have come out a week ago. But I hope you all enjoy it. And if not, you can go hit him up.
Well, and then now that Blake's had his turn, Elise is ready. So I just told her, whatever topic you like, whether it's folklore hauntings or true crime, you let us know and we'll tell you when you're going to be on.
Yes. So this is our Dark Stories comedy podcast. Welcome. Welcome back, hooligans. Okay, so I did something last week.
What'd you do?
And I'm bringing it up because of our episode today, which is on female serial killers. And it was one of those...
Did you kill somebody?
No. No.
Because that would not be a good time to discuss this on the podcast between you and me and whoever else listens to the show. I mean, I'm being, you know... like, hopeful that there's more than 5 people that listen to this podcast.
They play this in court. I didn't do it. And she's like, me going, yes, we did a podcast on serial killers. And while we're talking about female serial killers, listen to what I have to say. No. I was hoping it was one of those moments where I'm like, you know, it wouldn't have been so bad if I would have met one of these women in person that day. Like, just take me. Just take a knife and take me now.
I was like, were you in that much of a mood that you needed some pointers from the female serial killers on how to kill someone that really irritated you? That was the last straw with humanity. I need some pointers. Help me out.
I wouldn't need pointers.
Oh, God.
I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. Okay. I need a sip of wine before I go on with the story.
Okay.
Okay. So I work in an environment where I need to be dressed professionally. So I was wearing a pencil skirt to work. And you know how those skirts have hook and eyes? Hook in the back. Can you, like, put the skirt on and hook the hook and eye, like, with your hands behind your back? Or are you a hook and twist? Like, hook in the front and then twist it to the back and then zip?
I usually attempt where it normally goes a couple times. If I still can't get it, I twist it around.
Sure. Okay, that's what I did. I tried to be an adult, and it turns out that I'm not. So I had twisted it around. I was going to hook it in the front, and then I twisted it back. So this must have been Wednesday, because I was packing to go on vacation for 4th of July. And apparently my mind just slipped away with me, because I hooked it, but I didn't zip it.
Oh, no!
So I go to work, and I'm at work for probably an hour 15, hour and a half, and I'm, like, talking to people, and finally it comes to, like, 9:30 is, like, my bathroom break. I've had, like, 2 cups of coffee by then. I'll usually have water in the morning. It's time to pee. So I get up and I go to the bathroom, and does Caroline know anything's wrong? No, Caroline doesn't. Does Caroline feel a breeze on her butt at all? No, I sure don't. Do not. I marched my happy butt off to the bathroom. I used the bathroom. And still didn't feel anything. wash my hands because I'm not a heathen, and I go to leave and marching down the hall, gonna go do good things at work. It's almost the holiday. And I hear someone go, ma'am. And this is a woman that I know a lot of people at work, so this is a good thing or a bad thing. She's newish, so I don't know if she's like here for a short period of time. I don't know if she now has a job here. I don't know. She's seen enough of me apparently to, you know, be initiated into the workplace. And so I was like, yeah. She's like, your skirt's not zipped. And I'm like, oh my God. And like, I'm wearing a thong. I'm wearing a shirt that's like not super long. So like my butt's hanging out at work. And you know where I work.
Oh no.
For an hour and a half. And this isn't like I just park and like go into my job. No, I work in a tower, a 12-story tower. I have to park across the street in a parking garage. So my butt walked out of my house.
Literally, your butt.
My butt literally walked out of my house, hopped into my little car, drove to work, 20 minutes to work, parked on the fourth floor, and I don't take the elevator. This butt don't take the elevator. This butt don't look like this and take the elevator. No, this butt takes the stairs. Walk down four stories, walk across the street. I'm waiting in the lobby for the elevator because this butt does not walk up to the 11th floor. No, this butt, it takes the elevator to the 11th floor. Sit in the elevator, walk my happy self to my office. And like, thankfully, I'm going through my head. Like, it was one of those moments where it happened and it was almost so embarrassing. I just like couldn't believe that it happened. I was like, this is not real life. I did not just do this for an hour and a half in public. And I'm going through and I'm like, okay, I really don't think I talked to anyone. Like I was sitting in my office, quote unquote office, my cubby, and I had a sweater over the back. So like I was sitting every time I talked to someone. Other than that, I didn't see anyone because it was a holiday week and there was no one there anyway. But I was like, oh, just kill me now. Kill me now.
I feel like if somebody would have noticed, they would have told you. So you probably got away with it, except for the one random stranger.
Which I was thankful for. Like, truly, it was a woman. So I was like, I appreciate that as a woman. Like, thank you. Because my happy butt would have graced the good city of Baton Rouge with its presence. It sure would have. Because I was not. And it's not like skirts like that you, like, unzip to go to the bathroom. You just lift and go. Like, that.
Right.
I wouldn't have known. All day, I wouldn't have known. So, oh, all that is to say that, you know, I could have just died. And we're talking about female serial killers today. Yay!
Oh my God.
Female serial killers. And I can't say serial for some reason.
Mm. Oh no, that's unfortunate.
So, there you go. My horror dark story comedy story from last week. Oy, yoy, yoy.
Mm-mm-mm.
You just hate yourself sometimes. Do you have any updates? Or was mine enough for the both of us?
I think that's it.
Are you sure? Your family was in town. You didn't have anything you want to share?
No, it was a fun little weekend. We saw Spider-Man. We went to go see Spider-Man, and a storm came through, and the power went out in the middle of the, like, the climax of the end of the movie, and we're like, holy shit. And people actually got up to leave. I'm like, my butt is staying here. I don't care how long it takes for them to get the power back on. So they backed it up a good, like, 5 or so minutes. So we got to watch, like, that whole, like, the whole fight sequence at the end twice. It was great. It was fine.
That is good. No, it's so funny that, I mean, it's not funny that the power went out because, that throws off a vibe. But we actually had the power go out in a movie for us, too, and it was another Marvel movie. It was Black Panther, but it went off, like, in the previews, so they just told us to get out. They gave us free stubs for free movie tickets. I like Cinemark. They're really quality theater.
Yeah, props to Cinépolis for backing that movie up and getting us back. I think we were the only people still in the movie theater. Like, we were the last auditorium still showing a movie for the night.
Like, what? Did you think it was over? I mean, that's so weird that people would just leave.
Well, I guess they assumed that the power would just not come back up, but those were also the people that came trickling back in slowly after they found out the movie was back on, and then they left before the end credit scene. I'm like, how many? 10 years! 10 years has not taught you to stay? Oh my God.
We know better. We know
you'd
better.
You'd think.
Oh man. Mm-mm.
So that and SeaWorld and the Kennedy Space Center. So we kind of bounced around and did non-Disney things for once.
That's good. So. That's fun. And they have a lot of cool stuff there. Nashville's a good, not Nashville. I'm thinking I want to go to Nashville, but Orlando's a good tourist town. Lots of stuff to do. So should we get into it?
Yeah, I guess so.
You go first this week, I think. I went first last week.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was typing up mine, I thought I was going second, but I'm here for it. It's fine.
I mean, I'll go first if you want me to, but mine is a...
No, it's okay.
I mean, it's not a happy note, but I think you'll be pleased with mine.
Mine's kind of sad.
Okay, good. Then you go first.
All right.
I mean, not good that it's sad, but...
I kind of threw out the name of who I was doing, and, well, when I originally said we were doing female serial killers, Jessica was like, oh, are you doing Eileen Wuornos? And I'm like, I kind of wanted to, you know, not do the most famous one right off the bat.
Come on, Jess, we're not that predictable. Come on.
You know, but she's still a big one, and I actually had to hop across the pond for this one.
Ooh!
I'm excited. So, British serial killer, and I'm sure you've heard of her once I get started.
They're the worst, I feel like. Like, the female serial killers I know from Britain are the worst.
She's probably the worst serial killer I've ever heard of.
Okay.
By far. My sources are Wikipedia, allthat'sinteresting.com, historycollection.com, the Bristol Post, and BBC. So I am doing the angel maker, Amelia Dyer.
I have heard of her. Okay, yeah, this is good thing you're going first.
Yeah. So, Amelia Dyer may be one of the worst serial killers I've ever read about, and not worst as in ineffective, worst as in her body count was shockingly high. This monster murdered between 300 and 400 babies.
Ugh.
Babies. Ay. Over the course of about 20 years in Victorian Britain. And, what upset me even more was that this bitch is also known as the Bristol Angel Maker. Like, that sounds...
No.
So, how did she get her hands on that many babies, you may be wondering?
I am wondering that. Hey, Haley.
What?
How did she get her hands on that many babies?
I'm gonna tell you, Caroline. Okay. Here we go.
Okay.
Well, in the 1800s, unwed mothers could pay midwives or more well-off people to take care of their babies. Depending on the health of the baby and the involvement of the father, the price could reach up to about, it said 80 pounds, so I converted it. It's about $100, which is $100 then, which is about $8,000 today.
Holy smokes. Okay.
Or sorry, two grand.
Okay.
It's way off. most of the time, these babies were placed in good homes under loving care, and sometimes they would even return to their mothers once they were more financially stable.
Oh, that's a good cover to let us know that it wasn't all bad. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, but sometimes that's not the case. For the people who needed help, it's great. It's a great alternative, that kind of thing. The job title for people who do that, they're called baby farmers.
Even
the ones who are like genuinely just trying to help, that's just, it creeps me out. They're called baby farmers. The uneasy feeling that we have is validated by the fact that in some cases, like in the case of Amelia Dyer, these babies would sometimes end up in the wrong hands and they would be hurt or killed for personal financial gain. Apparently, this practice was used similarly by wealthy women who would send their babies to a wet nurse who would breastfeed and care for them until they reached toddlerhood because they were too busy with, I don't even know, their social lives to take care of newborn babies.
But they're so cute.
I know, right? Poor women, however, didn't usually have a choice in the matter. In Victorian Britain, having a baby out of wedlock was close to or worse than murder to them. Ugh. And those women had very little opportunity to even achieve any sort of financial stability. They were never even given a chance to make money to take care of those babies.
Ugh.
So, Amelia Dyer, which was her her married name, she was born Amelia Elizabeth Hobley. She was born in 1837 in a town called Pyle Marsh, which is near Bristol, England, and she was born to a large family. She was originally one of nine children, but her two younger sisters died, so she grew up the youngest of seven.
Gotcha.
She was the daughter of a popular shoemaker, and she was educated. She spent most of her childhood as the main caretaker for her mentally ill mother. And as an adult, she continued on that quote-unquote caretaking path, and she eventually became a nurse.
Really quick, what do you think makes a shoemaker popular? Comfort or style? Or comfort and style, and that's what makes him popular?
I would think it would be a little bit of both, but knowing some of the shoes I've put on my feet, it's probably style.
Okay, I think you're probably right. Continue.
Yeah. Amelia, unlike all the other amazing rock star nurses out there who take great care of their patients,
woo!
She used her position to cause harm.
Ugh.
Because of course she did.
We love nurses, but not this homie.
Yeah. 2 years before her mother's death, Amelia began as an apprentice with a corset maker in Bristol, so she's kind of bouncing around there.
She's already on my shit list. Get that away from me.
She became estranged from her family, and after her father's death, her brother inherited the family business, and she lost any financial support from her family. She then married a man named George Thomas. He was considerably older than her. He was 59, and she was 24.
Oh, yeah.
But they both lied about their ages to each other. He said he was 45, and she said she was 30.
Oh, well.
She and George had one child, a daughter named Ellen. And George died. George died in 1869. It was during that marriage that Amelia trained as a nurse and a midwife. She married William Dyer in 1872 after George died and had two children with him, Mary Ann and William Samuel. She eventually left him. So the first husband died, and then she left the second husband, but she kept his last name because she's known as Amelia Dyer today.
Gotcha.
Why
did she leave him, did you say? You cut out. It didn't say.
She left him.
Gotcha.
Probably because she was trying to be sneaky with this business that she has going.
Hmm.
Sneaky
bitch.
Yeah. So during her nurse training, a woman introduced Amelia to the world of baby farming. For a short time, Amelia owned and operated her own boarding house for pregnant, unmarried women. After she assisted in the delivery of the babies, the women paid her to care for their newborns. Some left their babies with her and never contacted her again, not caring what happened to their children, but others wrote to her, but rarely got a response.
Mm.
So once they left, she just, maybe they'd get a letter back from her, but usually they wouldn't get anything back.
Okay.
During her career as a nurse slash midwife slash baby farmer, Amelia supposedly suffered from mental breakdowns and suicidal thoughts. There was suspicion that she was faking it because she only seemed to suffer these breakdowns when people started getting suspicious of the number of children that had died in her care.
That's interesting. Did you, I know you mentioned her mother was mentally ill. Did you say was it depression, anxiety? It didn't say.
They didn't say. It was just that she was the caretaker for her mother.
You can get help, people.
So, regardless, she did actually attempt suicide once.
Okay.
She consumed two bottles of this medication, which was a combination of morphine and codeine.
Mm.
That's some strong stuff.
Quite a cocktail there.
But she survived because years of alcohol consumption and opium use had caused her to build up a tolerance.
Sorry, it's not funny, but it's a little funny because she cray and she's evil.
She's super crazy. Along with the delivery of babies in her boarding house, Amelia also scanned advertisements in newspapers in search of desperate women looking to give up their babies. She would contact the mothers and offer to take the babies at a low cost, lower cost than most baby farmers demanded. Her fee was about 5 or 10 pounds. She would also agree to an installment plan for payment to quote-unquote help struggling mothers. So any way she could get her hands on these babies, that was good for her. She would take them for cheap, or she would agree to here a pound there, here's some pence to go towards my stuff, whatever it is. An installment plan.
So you have the baby, and then you have to pay to get rid of it?
Those were ads. Like, they were literally trying to get rid of, like, sell somebody their baby.
Oh, I see.
Because they couldn't.
So she would be paying the person.
Pay 5 or 10 pounds to take the baby as opposed to trying to, like, try and do everything for that baby. It's like the cost.
I'm with you.
I would never do it, but apparently it was a thing back then.
I don't
then.
Think you can do that in 2019. So
no.
You're safe.
This at the end of this, they changed all kinds of laws.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah. So in already overcrowded cities, it was easy for Amelia to operate her business with little suspicion because poverty was prevalent. People often went hungry and infant mortality rates were extremely high already because they didn't make it. They didn't have enough food. Even if like mom was able to take care of them a little bit, if she wasn't eating enough, there's no way she's producing milk or being able to feed, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's sad.
So, when Amelia got her hands on a new baby, she immediately began the process of starving the baby to death.
Oh!
And to make things worse, to hide their cries, she used something called Godfrey's cordial, which was a mix of syrup and opium, to keep them sedated. Oh. And as they starved to death, they did so without making much of a fuss.
Oh, I'm so bummed.
I just want to snuggle all these little babies like a psychopath.
No shit.
Once the child was dead, Amelia would contact a doctor to examine them, declare them dead, and remove the body. If the doctor began to get suspicious, she simply moved to a new town. Sometimes she had one of her breakdowns and she entered into an asylum. She did spend a brief amount of time doing hard labor in 1879.
Good.
After a doctor's suspicion led to an investigation, she wasn't jailed for the murder, though. She was jailed for neglect.
Same diff. Cause and effect.
It didn't stop her from doing what she was doing. It actually made it worse a little bit, if you can imagine that. Once she completed her sentence, she picked up where she left off in her sickening career. She did make one change after serving her time. She stopped notifying doctors of the deaths. From 1880 on, she disposed of the bodies herself. Which just made her body count spike. Because there was nobody to have to answer to. She would just dispose of the bodies, no questions asked.
Okay, question. So I know you mentioned they had the advertisements where moms would pay for someone to take the baby. Was there any other way she was making money? Like, what's the point? Just sick, twisted, dark pleasure?
That and actually acting as a midwife for women who were staying in the boarding house.
That's awful.
Yeah. So, like, death was just her life.
So, like, she got, like, a rush from it, I guess.
At this point, she also changed her MO. Instead of starving the babies, she wrapped white dressmaking tape around their necks and slowly strangled them to death.
No.
Enjoying watching the life slowly drain out of
them. I just don't understand how you can get... I mean, I guess it's good. I don't understand how you can get a pleasure from this.
Right, right.
But it's not even like a functioning human who even really understands what's happening. Like, you can't even, quote-unquote, like, you know, the serial killers appreciate people being afraid. It's like babies don't even really understand what's happening. Like, how can this be something that brings you pleasure?
Her rush was just taking their lives.
It's just terrible.
It was horrible. And I'm
glad you went first.
And when the children were dead, she would wrap them in cloth and or tie them to rocks or bricks and throw them in the Thames.
No.
So the discovery that would eventually lead detectives to discover the gruesome crimes of one of the world's most notorious child killers occurred on March 30th, 1896. In Reading, England, along the Thames, someone discovered a package weighed down with a brick in the water. Inside the parcel was the partially decomposed body of infant Helena Fry, as well as a baby boy who was left unnamed, both swaddled in layers of linen. White tape had been wound around their necks, and Helena had a knot under one ear. Forensics, which was in its infancy, linked Dyer to the babies, but the police didn't immediately arrest her. This part was cool.
Okay.
Instead, they placed a fake advertisement seeking a loving couple to take a newborn, which now 58-year-old Amelia answered. As she left her home to meet her new quote-unquote client, she was greeted by four police officers. This happened about 3 days after the discovery of the baby's bodies in the river.
Right. I think it's
the
really,
opposite.
I think it's really interesting. You mentioned forensics they used. I didn't realize it was that early in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. That's super cool.
Yep. So the officers entered her home and encountered the overwhelming stench of rotting flesh, though they found no bodies.
Huh.
They did, however, find enough evidence in the form of ads, letters, telegrams, and opium to charge her with murder. They also ordered that the Thames be dredged to look for more babies. She didn't even try to hide it at this point. As police searched the river, she famously told them, "You'll know all mine by the tape around their necks." She was not even worried about it.
That is so crazy that she's not even trying to hide it. Jeez, I didn't realize all that. Okay.
And she's 58 years old at this point.
Yeah, which I guess is like being 100 in the 1800s. I don't really know.
So when Amelia Dyer was placed on trial in May of 1896, it was for the murder of the two babies that were found in Reading. She was found guilty in under 5 minutes.
Well, good.
Psycho bitch. During the next 3 weeks, she filled 5 notebooks with her confessions.
Whoa. Jeez.
So since 1896, 14 murders have been directly linked to her, but experts believe she murdered over 300 babies during her career as a baby farmer. After her trial, adoption laws became more strict and authorities combed through ads trying to prevent the selling of children. They also eventually began pressing that the fathers of illegitimate children be held financially responsible.
Boom. Alimony, bitch.
Mm-hmm. She was hung on June 10th, 1896. And yeah, that's the disturbing story of the quote-unquote angel maker and baby killer Amelia Dyer. And have you looked at a picture of this woman?
I have not, actually. I've heard of her, but I've never looked at
her. Please, please, while we're right here, Google her. It should be her Wikipedia photo. It is the most terrifying thing I've ever seen in my life. She is a scary lady. D-Y-E-R.
D-Y-E-R, okay. Amelia...
That is, like... She's terrifying.
Ugh.
Right?
Yeah. This one with all, like, the shadows. Are you going to do this one?
Yeah, yeah. Ugh. The Wikipedia one. That one. Yeah.
I wouldn't trust that lady with a pet rock.
No, right?
Jeez. Honey. I mean, I would think Britain in the 1800s is rough, but sweet mercy.
Yeah, she's scary looking.
She looks like Winston Churchill.
I think that's an insult to Winston Churchill.
Okay, so she looks like if Winston Churchill, like, smoked a pack a day and got beat up at a bar at, like, 3 a.m. That's what she looks like.
Fair assessment.
Ugh. Awful. Okay.
So, yeah, on that depressing note, what do you have?
Something much less depressing. It's murder, so it's still not happy, but I dare say it's a little more fun than killing babies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. I'm going to tell you the story of Leonarda Correggio. Nope, just kidding. Leonarda Cianciulli. Pretend like that's right. The soap maker of Correggio, which is what I meant earlier. Have you ever heard of her? Leonarda Cianciulli? Whew, I was super excited about that intro and I just whiffed it.
It's okay.
I was looking because I had to have my sources somewhere and I had to type them in really quick because I forgot again. You'd think I was wasn't a journalism major.
Eventually, we're going to get a hold of ourselves and be fine.
Okay. But I did get my source. It's Murderpedia, which is a super great source. And also with a dash of Wikipedia. Today, I'm going to tell you the story of Leonarda Cianciulli, who, had her life not been so entrenched in superstition, curses, and Romani fortune tellers, perhaps would not have become a murderer at all. She is known as the soap maker of Correggio. Born on November 14th, 1893, in the Italian town of Montella, Leonarda, was an Italian serial killer who murdered 3 women between 1929 and 1940.
So we just, like, got as far away from Louisiana as we could and went out of the country.
We did. I got... I'm just realizing I got so excited you went out of the country and I did the exact same thing. Oh, man. We just dream of being abroad, but not with these broads.
No.
So I read that her childhood was an unhappy one, but I can't find one inciting incident or why that was such a thing. So she might have just been an angsty teen like we all were. She did, though, attempt suicide twice as a young girl. So something was up. In 1917, she married registry office clerk Raphael Pensardi against her parents' wishes. So she did. She did the thing. She did the deed. They did not approve of her marriage, as they had planned to marry her off to another more respectable man, whatever mom.
Though really, we're getting to the point where in my life, I'm like, okay, well, why aren't arranged marriages a thing? Because then I could just not have to worry about it anymore. I can't find one myself, so, you know. Though, yeah.
I'm going to sign you up for the Bachelorette. It's going to be great.
Oh, God.
We'll both go. No, that would be weird. I don't want to do that.
No. No, let's not do that.
Okay. Now, what follows may be quote-unquote to blame for Leonardo's crimes. She claimed that on this occasion, when she married the registry clerk against her parents' wishes, the day of their wedding, her mother cursed the couple. So keep that in mind, because we'll circle back to it. Didn't think you were getting ooky spooky curses, huh, in female serial killer true crime.
Well, you said Romani, so I kind of figured it would kind of go that way.
No, I'm sticking my tongue out at you. You know it all. Okay. Nevertheless, cursed, moved on. The couple moved to Lauria, which was Ponsardi, her husband's native town.
Okay.
And after this, it kind of seems like she was just always sort of a bad egg. Because in 1921, she was sentenced for fraud and imprisoned in 1927. After she was released, the couple moved to Lacedonia, and the home was destroyed by an earthquake in 1930. So it's just, the hits just keep coming.
Yeah.
So then after the earthquake, the couple moved to Correggio, where Leonardo opened a small shop. And she was actually really popular in the town and very well respected in the neighborhood. Like, people knew her, people liked her, and they liked her shop. So aside from all that happened in her past, she was kind of normal and had like a really respectable life here. But not for long. So to backtrack a little bit, Leonardo went through 17, that's 17, pregnancies during her marriage to Raphael. She miscarried 3 of the 17 and lost 10 in their youth. So she lost 13 of her children.
Oh my God. If that, like, if she wasn't off the rails before, that I can't see how anybody could come out of something like that completely sane. I'd have lost my mind.
Yeah.
Blake needs to hear all this, Mr. Skeptic, because if you don't believe in curses after hearing this kind of stuff, please.
Truly. So then it's, of course, not surprising that she was super heavily protective of her 4 surviving children.
Yeah.
Now, all of this, we can all kind of go, we can all understand. We can all understand getting pregnant 17 times, carrying them, and losing 13 of them. Like, we can all understand how that would make someone go off the rails. Perhaps we cannot all understand that her fears were really specifically fueled by a warning she'd received from a fortune teller saying that she would marry and have children, but that all of her children would die young. Mm. So, I read that and I was like, this sounds very Cersei Game of Thrones to me. Like the part where she...
Yeah.
Not loving. Rip the final season, because it sucked.
Not saying that, you know, anybody deserves that, but Cersei kind of... Anyway, continue.
Okay, so all that happened, she's super protective of her kids. Then she reportedly also visited another Romani, which is a gypsy, who practiced palm readings and told her, quote, "In your right hand, I see prison. In your left, a criminal asylum." End quote.
Ooh. Okay.
Keep that in mind. So coupling this curse with the one about the kids and the one from her mother, it's not, I guess, too big of a leap that she lived a life deeply rooted in superstition. Cut to 1939. Leonardo learns that her eldest son, Giuseppe, planned to join the Italian army in preparation for World War II. Giuseppe, her favorite child, the apple of her eye, her favorite son, was going to join the war effort. And she was determined to protect him at all costs. Now, though she had 4 kids, he was her favorite. And who do you think the favorite is in your family? Jake?
I'd like to say me, but, you know.
You might be.
Jake's the baby.
He's not me. And there's only 2 of us. I had a 50-50 shot. Okay. So he was the favorite. He was going to war. And she was, I mean, understandably, like, super nervous. So, if you have a son one day and he wants to join the army and you're really super nervous about him going, what's the first thing you're going to do? He tells you, I'm going to the army. What's your reaction?
Cry.
Okay. A human reaction. Are you sure you wouldn't jump straight to human sacrifice?
I think I'd have to go with a couple steps before that. I wouldn't make that leap right away.
No, she...
There would have to be, yeah.
She, Lady Gaga, during the Super Bowl, leap jumped to the conclusion.
But no zip line. Like, she just, like...
No
free dive, fall right into
free
it.
Free fall to that conclusion that his safety required human sacrifice. So here we go.
All right.
Let me introduce you to the soap maker.
And human sacrifice. So you're not even like sacrificing a goat or a rabbit or something.
No. We don't start small. No, she went for it. She went for it. Full force. Okay.
Oh, God.
Now, Leonarda was actually something of a fortune teller herself. And she found her victims in three women who came to visit her for help, guidance, and to escape the monotony and solitude of their current situations, which is just sad. I'm sorry. Have you ever done anything with fortune telling or tarot reading?
Nope.
My friends really want to do it. And I want to go and witness it.
I would be too scared to hear the results because I mm-mm.
Yeah, mm-mm. I'm not someone who really needs to know the future. Personally,
no.
Prefer to live every day to day. I like the spontaneity of life sometimes.
Exactly, sort of, maybe.
But if someone could tell me who I'm going to marry, hopefully, that would be great. Okay, so Faustina Setti was her first victim. Now, as far as victims go, and I'm not saying I condone crime, obviously, but for Leonardo's purposes, Setti was a pretty solid choice, if such a thing exists for a victim. Which is to say that Leonarda believed that no one would miss her if she was gone, and she was right. So Faustina was a lifelong spinster, which I'm just picturing like a 12-year-old spinster.
Me?
No, I'm not picturing you. You're a gorgeous sunflower mermaid.
Please.
Was a lifelong spinster who sought out Leonarda for help in finding a husband.
So it's me.
It's not you. You shut up. So Leonarda foresaw a suitable partner for Faustina in Pola, which is a city, not a person.
Okay.
She persuaded Faustina to write letters and postcards to relatives and friends that would be mailed once she reached her destination, so that everyone would know she's okay. Sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
But she, being Leonarda, convinced Faustina that she shouldn't tell anyone where she was going, which wouldn't check in my family. But Faustina obliged. No. And went to visit Leonarda on the day of her departure to say goodbye. Peace out, girl. Go and find love. See you soon. See you on the flip side. No. Leonarda instead offered Faustina a glass of drugged wine, which is not the good kind. Mm-mm.
No. That's the cheap-ass box wine.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Offered her a glass of drugged wine before killing her with an axe. And stuffing her...
With an axe?
With an axe!
What?
And stuffing her...
Pattern.
What?
Keep up the pattern.
Yes. So killed her with an axe, and then stuffed her body into a closet. Casual. What's not so casual is that she then cut the body into 9 parts, gathered the blood into a little basin, and if you'd like to know exactly, straight from the horse's mouth, what happened next... Here's a little snippet of Leonarda's official statement from her confession. Quote, I threw the pieces into a pot, added 7 kilos of caustic soda, which I had bought to make soap, and stirred the mixture until the pieces dissolved in a thick, dark mush.
No!
That I poured into several buckets and emptied in a nearby septic tank. It gets better. That wasn't part of the quote. That was me. As for the blood in the basin... I waited until it had coagulated, because of course you would. That was also me. Dried it in the oven, ground it, and mixed it. Are you ready?
No.
Mixed it with flour, sugar, chocolate, milk, and eggs.
She made a cake!
As well as a bit of margarine, kneading all the ingredients together. I made lots of crunchy tea cakes. And served them to the ladies who came to visit, though Giuseppe and I also ate them. End quote.
No.
Haley's face is just horror. She's covering her mouth, and I think she's about to throw up.
Oh my god. Note to self, if I ever decide that I'm going to go to the gypsies for help with my love life, do not ever eat anything, do not ever accept anything, and no.
Nope, you thought that was going to be about soap? Ugh. Nope. She made tea cakes and fed them to the sun whom she did the human sacrifice for.
No!
Yeah. And she ate them. Like,
no!
They didn't know what was in it, but she knew. And she ate them. I know. Moving on.
Does chocolate mask that coppery taste of blood, or does it not even have that taste once it's dried out and crispy? And I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Continue.
You know, I wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know. No, I'm not going there. Nope. I need to drink this Mangorita to get the coppery taste out of my mouth.
Just think about that next time you have red velvet cake.
I hate you. You've just ruined my favorite cake for life. God damn it.
I do love red velvet cake, too.
Jesus.
Okay.
No.
All right. So, while one human sacrifice would seem to be one too many as far as human sacrifices go, Leonardo wasn't planning on stopping there. And as I'm reading this, it is super crazy how it was like not a murderer for almost half a century. And then like, oh, human sacrifice. Yeah, we're going to do that. And you know what? While we're at it, we're going to make soap and we're going to eat it too. Like, it's kind of metal. It's not good, but you got to wonder. You gotta wonder.
No, no, we don't have to wonder.
I have to wonder.
Oh, no.
I've been wanting to share this story with you for such a long time.
No.
Victim number two, Francesca Sauvi, I think. So the next woman that came knocking on Leonardo's door was Francesca Sauvi. I meant to look up all these names. I'm really, really sorry, everyone. She sought out Leonardo for work advice. In turn, Leonardo claimed to have found her a job at a school for girls in Piacenza. I'm not Italian. So like Faustina, Francesca was also persuaded to write postcards detailing her plans to be sent to friends. She too didn't tell anyone where she was going, and she also went to visit Leonardo before she departed. And like Faustina, was given drugged wine and killed with an axe. And her body was given the same treatment as Faustina's. So if you were still hungry,
nope. More where that came from. I will never eat again. Never.
So, the third and final victim of the soap maker of Correggio was Virginia Cacioppo. And I made a note that since this is a podcast about dark stories with just a light sprinkling of family drama, family stories more of, it's actually a family member that sort of solves her murder. So, a little hereditary win. Virginia was a former soprano and supposedly formerly sang at La Scala, but at 53, her career had long since been over and she'd been living in poverty. So, going to her friendly neighborhood fortune teller for guidance, Leonardo foresaw, quote unquote, foresaw, that she would find a job in Florence as a secretary to a mysterious impresario. Leonardo, once again, begged Virginia not to tell a soul, just like she did with the other two. And Virginia, excited to be back in the circuit, agreed excitedly. She also went to see Leonardo before she departed. Now, the pattern of drugging and axing, is that what you would call it? Axing?
Sure.
It remained the same, but Leonardo did divert from her MO a little bit with Virginia, and I have another quote for you directly from her statement.
No, I don't want to hear anything.
Get ready! Okay.
No.
Quote. Haley's cuddled up with a blanket right now, anxiously awaiting me. You gotta admit that this is better than dead babies. She's burying her head. She knows I'm right. Okay. Quote. She ended up in the pot like the other two. Her flesh was fat and white when it had melted.
Oh, God.
I added a bottle of cologne, and after a long time on the boil, I was able to make some most acceptable creamy soap. I gave bars to neighbors and acquaintances. The cakes, too, were better. That woman was really sweet. End quote.
No!
Oh, I wish I snapped a picture of your face that you just made. Haley is horrified right now.
I'm thanking God I don't use bar soap. I use, like, bottled body wash.
Good, creamy-smelling bottled body wash?
Yes. Jesus.
And no. So with this one, this is where the soap maker moniker is born. So that's it. That's all the murders. She did three. The requisite
okay,
three
but like,
for
being she's known as the soap maker, but she made cakes with all of them. Yeah. She only made soap with the last one.
Yeah. I don't know why it's not cakes. I guess maybe because like the cannibalism shtick was maybe already taken, but soap is new. Like how many serial killers do you know make soap?
Is it considered cannibalism for blood if it's not flesh?
I'm going to consider it. Maybe not.
I mean,
okay, you're right.
Could vampires be cannibals?
You're right. Point made.
I don't know. It's a question that I kind of don't know if I want to know the answer to, but, you know, you got to ask.
Well, if there are any cannibals out there that know and want to clarify for
us. Don't tell us because we don't want to know.
Well, I want to hear.
Because we don't want them to contact us.
And I'll sort them. Why? They're not going to eat us.
You don't know.
I do know. They're not killers. Not all of them, I don't think. Maybe they don't
cannibals are not killers.
I still didn't send you that story of the guy that ate his foot. I'm going to find it. I'm going to send it
to you.
You
did.
Did I? Okay. It's such a good story.
No. It's no.
Okay.
No.
Now, to round out Virginia's story with the 1-2 fam bam punch, Virginia's sister-in-law, her nosy sister-in-law, you know you have them. You should love them, and here's why. She became suspicious of Virginia's sudden disappearance and had last seen her entering Leonardo's house. The sister-in-law reported her fears to the superintendent of the police, who opened up an investigation and soon arrested Leonardo. But before that, Leonardo stuck strongly to her innocence, was like, I did not do this. Like, that's cray. I'm old. That's why would I make soap and kill these people? I guess they don't know she's making soap right now, but she stuck to her innocence. She's like, I did not do this. That is, until the police openly accused her precious baby boy, Giuseppe. Then she confessed faster than you can say Dove Beauty Bar.
Mm-mm.
And not only did she almost immediately confess, she also provided detailed accounts of what she had done to save her son from any blame, which is where we get all of her very detailed statements. So she was tried for murder in Reggio Emilia in 1946 and remained unrepentant throughout the trial. So here's an official account, not by her, but by a journalist who was there. It goes, quote, at her trial in Reggio Emilia last week, poetess Leonarda gripped the witness stand rail with oddly delicate hands and calmly set the prosecutor right on certain details. Her deep-set dark eyes gleamed with a wild inner pride as she concluded, I gave the copper ladle, which I used to skim the fat off the kettles, to my country, which was so badly in need of metal during the last days of the war. And that's the end of the quote. So a little, that's kind of what the trial looked like. Apparently she gave a ladle to the war
effort. So the ladle she used to make the soap was probably part of, like, a military plane or something during World War II. Oh,
that's why they lost.
Oh, God. They had that bad juju on them.
Did.
Oh.
Did have oh. bad juju. Bad gree-gree. Okay.
No. No, no.
So she was obviously found guilty and sentenced to 33 years. Are you ready for this? Well, yeah, it should have been life.
Hey, no. Mm-hmm.
Hi, Graham.
Let me just let him out really quick. Hang on.
Yeah, I had to text Elise to quiet Kylo down because I could hear him barking through the two doors.
Oh, I didn't hear him ruining everything, my dog. Okay. She was sentenced to... words are hard. She was sentenced to 33 years, 30 of which were spent in prison. In your right hand, I see prison. Three of which were spent
in an asylum.
In a criminal asylum! In your left, I see a criminal asylum!
So, I would assume she went to the asylum first and then was sent to prison?
No,
or was it the other way around?
Actually, she went to prison first. She went to prison. and then spent the last 3 years of her life in a criminal asylum. So on October 15th, 1970, I didn't realize it was this soon. Okay. At the age of 79, Leonarda died at Pizzuoli's Women's Criminal Asylum of cerebral apoplexy, which is basically a type of intracranial hemorrhage. I'm smart. So her body was returned to her family for burial, but if you so choose, you can see her murder weapons and even take a peek into the pot she used to boil her victims at the Criminology Museum in Rome, Italy. So, the next time you're getting all soapy soaped up with your Dove Fresh and Clean scented soap bar, maybe just take a hot minute to think about what went into making the soap. And that's the story of Leonarda Cianciulli, the soap maker of Correggio.
No. Ugh, good job, but no.
Better than dead babies.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm so happy I got to finally tell you this story. I've had it written for a couple months before we even, like, started the podcast. I mean, like, the idea was there, but it wasn't even, the podcast wasn't even named yet. There you go.
Well, there we go. And we did end it on a not so dark and depressing note, because what really can you do with dead babies?
Right. And it is, I mean, I'm laughing. I'm obviously not making light. She's a murderer, but she had style.
I don't know why, and because it's not even, like, it's the same plot line, but I kept having House of Wax flashes during your story.
Ooh, hang on, my dog.
Get out! Get out! Go, shoot!
Ugh, he wants attention. I didn't see House of Wax. What is that about?
Jerry Padalecki's in that one, and Paris Hilton, and
Paris Hilton.
All them.
I'm not going to see that. Yeah. Paris Hilton's in it.
She's in there for, like, you know, an hour. That they end up, you know, car breaks down in a random town, and they end up in this wax museum, but all the wax figures are actual bodies. They were people.
You go, she's only in it for, like, an hour. The movie's probably an hour and 20. I thought you were going to say she's only in it for, like, 2 seconds.
Okay, well, maybe not an hour. Maybe, like, 30 minutes. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen it. She ends up with a pole through her head.
Oh, man. I was listening to a new podcast today, which, if anyone's looking for recommendations, Noble Blood. It's an Aaron Mankey. It's not him. It's just he kind of helped make it. And it's basically lore, but about royalty. So the first one I listened to is about Marie Antoinette. And it's really, really good. And it's a woman who does it. And I'm all about, you know, female creators. I mean, you know, I'm about creators in general. But if the women are doing well, let's go, girls. Let's go.
Yeah.
She's really good, Dana Schwartz. And I'm not going to tell you all about it because it told me some things that I didn't know, but it actually turned out they were talking about someone who used to teach their the royal family, like the kids, about art. And they had her to show that she was loyal to the revolution and not to the crown. Had her, like, see her head, Marie Antoinette's head, and Louis XVI's head. And she was a sculpture artist. Maybe you did know this, and I just didn't. So she did wax heads of, she did wax casts of Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI's heads and toured them around Europe, but then had a base in London and created her own museum, if you will, of wax figures. And her name was Madame Tussauds. I didn't know that. I thought that was pretty cool.
I didn't know that. That's cool. We have one out here in Orlando.
Yeah.
So that I have been meaning to go to, but
I thought it was just kind of a play, but no, it's a historical thing. So if you're a history nerd like I am, check it out.
Yeah, that's nice. And while we're on the topic of recommending podcasts, because I told my friend I'd give them a shout out, if you are interested in just hearing, you know, opinions or thing or history of movies, we will get some pop culture references on this show. I know that I lost count. We did like 6 or 7 in the first episode alone. Mm-hmm. But we kind of calmed down a little bit after that. But my friend Sumner and his friends have a podcast called Off the Highway, where they literally just talk about movies. They have a couple of episodes in a series where they talk about the history of cinema, and then they talk like by decade and all of that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in movies, go ahead and check out Off the Highway.
Off the Highway, totally. Very cool. Shout out, guys. Okay, do you have any scary stories to share from our...
I do, but not this week, because my cousin, Jenny, shared something with me, but it's hauntings related, so I'm going to save it for our next hauntings episode. It was just something that she found on Facebook, and she's like, check out these comments, and then she sent me this other one that it was literally a picture of somebody with a VHS tape, and it said Exorcism of Linda in January of '97. I'm like, no,
we don't do that.
I'm good.
We don't cover that on this podcast.
But there was another one that was like, it was a picture, and it was ghost related, like there was a ghost in the picture or something. She's like, you gotta read these comments, maybe that'll be good for one of your episodes, but I want to save that for like a haunting episode.
Okay, cool. I didn't do my research this. I feel like a lot of them are haunting. We don't really have any hometown local murder. I mean, I have a few. Oh, it's I'm not going to tell the story. I'm just going to refer another podcast. But Serial Killers, the Parcast podcast, just did the Bayou Strangler, who is... forgetting his name. I'm gonna go find it really quick. Give me 2 seconds. His name is Ronald Dominique, who was active in Thibodeau in the late 90s, early 2000s. So go check that out.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yep.
Recent. That's fun.
Yep. So check that out if you want. I'm not gonna tell it to you because Parcast does a 2-episode series on it, and it was kind of before my time. Not really, but I was a kid whenever it was all happening, obviously. But go check it out. Another plug. Okay, so all of this is to say, please send us your stories. Ugh, I'm sick of doing all the work myself. Please help me out.
Yeah, because you'd really be helping Caroline out, because I have done nothing to help.
Well, you have one for haunting, so now I don't have to do that one. But please.
Well, you can thank Jenny for that, but you know.
Thanks, Jenny. Please be like Jenny and send us your stories in text. Don't be like B, who told me in person when I was drunk. That didn't help.
I thought she told you in Snapchat and then it was gone.
So Snapchat was another one that she told me. But it wasn't really a haunting. It was just something that freaked her out as a kid.
Yeah.
She told me about the Ouija board while drunk. 3 glasses of wine in, at least. Okay. Yes. Email us. It's hereditarypod@gmail.com. Please help me, people. Rate and review us on iTunes. Please help us, people. 5 stars only. That was not me.
Follow us on Instagram at It's Hereditary Pod. Follow us on Twitter, Hereditary Pod. I think Facebook. That's the extent of our social media. Woo-hoo. Oh, yes, Facebook.
Obviously.
It's connected to my Facebook, so I just kind of forget that it's its own separate entity. until I like something that we posted, and then I get a notification, Haley Jeandron, like this. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and thanks.
I know what I just did.
Yeah, we're not getting a lot of comments and stuff on Facebook, but people are interacting, and we really appreciate it. We have a lot of fun picking out stuff to share with you guys, and we appreciate whenever we get a little feedback on that. Okay, next week. I'm so excited. So excited because
go ahead.
So it's not next week, but it'll come out the week before best week of the year, Shark Week. So in the spirit of Shark Week, and as a believer in the Megalodon myself, which I'm sure we will talk about next week, we are gonna do sea monsters.
Woo! Yay!
So be sure to tune in. It's gonna be super fun. We're not going to either one of us do the Megalodon because the Megalodon is real.
Correct.
So it wouldn't fit in with the shtick of the podcast.
But everything else is fair game. Kelpies, Krakens, mermaids, sirens, whatever the hell.
Yeah, I'm not going to miss because I can only think of the one I'm planning on doing and I don't want you to know. But yes, so that will be our next episode. Rate and review, email, please email us. Please, for the love of all things good, email us because I can't do this anymore. Okay.
Are you okay?
I'm okay.
We're good now?
I'm okay. Now that everybody knows how frustrated I am, how sad I am that no one wants to talk to us. You can even text us, DM us, slide into our DMs. We don't care.
We would just like to have somebody to talk about. But we did get another person in the Facebook group that is not someone we know. So we're getting there.
Ooh, do you know their name?
No. Oh.
Well, shout out to you, the royal you. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm a little amped up. I've got all of these dopamines from running and then wine.
Oh, God. All right. Yeah. On that note, we should say goodnight to the nice people.
Sweet dreams, everyone.
Sweet dreams after
soapy,
these.
Bubbly dreams. But don't dream of dead
babies.
Yeah,
definitely not. Not of dead babies. I was about to say, not of dead babies.
No. Well, sweet dreams, you little hooligans.